Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just finished watching Season 3, Episode 5, titled Chapter 5, The Flayed. The Flayed are the people that the Mind Flayer has taken over, according to Mike.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty cool turn of phrase, The Flayed.
Uh-huh. It has like a very Bolton-y connotation for me.
Yeah.
Like coming off of Game of Thrones about 2 months ago, I'm like, oh, The Flayed is definitely about skin coming off. And it kind of does.
Yeah.
It kind of comes off.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they weren't joking about this being the grossest season of Stranger Things. The Jake Busey dissolving into just a red goo and then reforming into that.
It's like if the blob went through like a KFC trash can is what I was thinking when I was watching it.
Sick burn on Jake Busey, but...
Oh, and then he turns into the Flayed, the monster.
It was wild. What'd you think about this episode?
I liked it a lot, actually. I thought it was a pretty callback-heavy episode, which was great. Like, once they get to the compound of this conspiracy theorist, they just the callbacks were coming fast and furious, and they were so well placed and so well timed. Like, I thought, oh, it's really funny that Hopper looks into the talk box when the guy says look in the camera, just like Jonathan does in the first season or the second season. And then when they get in there, they start arguing, and he's like, look, we don't have time for this lover's quarrel. And they're like, we're not lovers. Give me a break. It's so good.
Yeah. Especially from his perspective, this just happened like, 9 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And he is like the human not lovers bullshit detector here.
Right.
And it's so good.
He should moonlight from his conspiracy journalist. He should do couples therapy or like one of those call-in radio shows.
And it's a podcast. Just involves a lot of vodka.
It's a lot of vodka. This episode covered a lot of grounds. Like, we started it with Hopper and Joyce having to be forced to walk through the forest to Illinois. And we had, we just discovered the nature of the elevator. And by the end of this, we've got a full-blown we found it. The apparatus, the Soviet apparatus that's opening up the portal. We found I'm not sure what these little underground facilities underneath the farmhouses have to do with that, but there's that too. And, then Nancy and Jonathan get with the other kids. So like now all the kids minus Dustin are together. It's just moving the plot right along.
I wonder if it's like a Death Star kind of thing where, with the turbo laser, the lasers kind of come together at a point and then create a huge...
Yeah, various super laser tributaries come together.
Yeah, because they talk... And I think something they did kind of beautifully here is we were talking about, the plausibility of this underground tunnel project and everything. And Steve's pointing out while they're walking through, look, there are no ladders, there are no maintenance hatches. Like, this is not a regular tunnel.
Right.
But I wonder if, coming from the Hess farm and the mall and all these other points, it could be a similar, oh, all of these things are sort of coming to a point down these really long halls to blow open that portal. And it's interesting, too, because the portal might actually be the saving grace for this whole thing. Because they talk about how, Mike makes the case here that we can't just stop Billy. We can't just stop the Flayed. We have to stop the Flayer, right? We have to stop the Mind Flayer. That might be his exit from our dimension or whatever, is through this portal that the Russians just happen to open up because they want to check it out.
Right.
I don't know.
What else do we... Oh, well, something from last episode that I forgot to talk about was Dustin not having collarbones. Did you know that that was like... That's Gatton Matarazzo? That's the real-life condition he suffers from... cleidocranial dysplasia that has messed up his front teeth also has caused him to be born without clavicles.
No collarbone?
There are clips where you can see him doing crazy shit. Like, some people that are born with this can, like, touch their shoulders together in front of them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so when he was like, I meant to talk
and
about that.
And he can't squeeze through the fucking...
I mean, if Steve was willing to push a little bit harder, I'm sure he could physically fit. But I thought that was kind of wild that it's not just teeth. He's missing bones, y'all. And I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, I figured if you didn't have clavicles, your arms would just flop around. But apparently, it's like kind of optional. It's an optional bone.
All right. You got mine taken out.
I'm going to have my clavicles removed. Uh-huh. Yeah, I want to be able to touch my... You could use them as a third limb. You could hold things, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like a book. You could read a book just with your... Right. And then your hands are free to play video games. It's the perfect thing.
Huh, that's crazy.
Really leaning into the Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, they named him. So
last episode, yeah, they name-checked Arnold.
Yeah, how do you feel about this? Because... So Dan Harmon, creator of Community, Rick and Morty, et cetera, a few others, et cetera, has this comedy trope he calls the Monopoly guy, mm-hmm. where you create a character whose appearance is so bizarre that it's designed to be commented on. Like, for example, this originated from Ace Ventura 2, mm-hmm. where they make a guy dressed up as the Monopoly guy just so Jim Carrey can say, mm-hmm. call him the Monopoly guy. Is it not a pretty close to like they're just calling him Arnold Schwarzenegger? He looked like when he comes down the staircase with his denim jacket and his fingerless leather gloves holding the gun, mm-hmm. with the haircut, with the Arnold kind of accent he's doing. He's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Super heavy boots, like he's made of metal or something.
Yeah, he sounds like he weighs 1,000 pounds coming down the same. Like, mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue with the idea that, like, oh, really, you're just going to put this in there so you can make this one joke, mm-hmm. and it'll be done. I don't know. It's not the best thing they do in Stranger Things.
I think they can help out if they develop him into a character in his own right. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can subvert the trope later, but it is weird that they've decided to go that route.
They almost didn't get the chance. Like, I was surprised. Kind of surprised that Hopper was ready to blow this dude's head off, because he pulls that trigger. He's going to shoot this guy, and he makes the mistake of giving him a countdown.
Right.
So he knows exactly when to spring into action.
But Hopper was not bluffing. Hopper doesn't bluff with a gun to the person's head, we found out.
No, I love those scenes, though. This guy's everything deaf. With Hopper this episode.
This guy's deaf in whatever ear that gun went off by. Yeah. But, right. Probably everybody down in that concrete bunker where there's automatic weapons fire.
I was a hellstorm. Oh my god! It's
amazing no one got killed.
Yeah.
Did someone get killed?
I don't think anybody got killed.
Not the guy that was tied up. The bait. I mean, obviously Alexei.
The other guy, the other scientist, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But I really love the moment where Joyce thinks she's going to help out and throws the gun to Hopper, and it just sails right past him, slides to the bad guy. And
it's so funny.
Everybody looks at it like, oh shit.
Yeah. And there's also Joyce got a justified peeling out because, you know, they're trying to run away from the Terminator, and Hopper's just screaming, drive. Did you think there was a little bit of a Back to the Future reference there with them running over the farmhouse's mailbox?
That sounds very familiar to me.
Yeah.
But I couldn't pinpoint the scene.
When they emphasized the name Hess, I thought, like, oh, is the guy who... Because, you know, the Back to the Future backstory is this guy in 1955. He was, like, some kind of crazy eccentric pine scientist, and he sold the property that became known as Twin Pines, became a mall. Then when Marty ran over to one of the pines, it was, like, Lone Pine Mall. And I thought, like, huh, I wonder if that guy's actually name was Hess. Why you were setting things up, I looked it up, and it's actually Peabody.
Oh.
Crazy man Peabody with his pines. So it's not that, but I did feel like that whole scene, like, if you just put that Zemeckis, like, it'd be very Back to the Future.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know.
There were other references I'm not sure I got. Is Jonathan making a reference when he says, like, oh, I was out late last night with Fagin and the gang? Is that a thing, or is that just...
Fagin
These are some
the
of his friends.
I don't know.
Does Jonathan have friends? I didn't think Jonathan had friends, but he says he does in season two.
You're right. No, I don't. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of... It's neat that, like, if you buy that all these kids are just going to nonchalantly join this kind of, like, mystery search together, it is cool how everything kind of connects. Mm-hmm. You know, Nancy stealing the medical records. She sees that there's, you know, like, a lot of these things are consistent with what happened with Will. Like, I was, like, low 90s body temperatures. And, you know, that leads them all to kind of share what they know, which then leads them to figure out, like, well, they need to find a source, you know, because we can't just drive the mind flayer out of Billy. That's what we did last season, and look where we're at now, Stranger mm-hmm. Things 3. If we don't want a Stranger Things 4, we better find a mind flayer. So they go to find a source. How do you find a source? You let Miss Driscoll go. That leads you to the hospital. everything is the mechanics of the plot when it gets going has been pretty impressive this season, I thought.
And it's looking to shape up into a very similar, okay, everybody's on the same page now, working together, because everybody has pieces of the information. Everybody's kind of at the dead end, like, where do we go from here? And now I feel like they all need to come together, share what they know, and then figure out how to defeat the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
I thought is interesting when they had Hopper and Joyce walking through the forest, and like Hopper's throwing a fit about the mosquitoes, and then everything kind of dissolves the smoke. And I thought that somehow, for like a split second, Hopper had gotten pulled into the upside down, and he was just. But then it's just it's L trying to track him down.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was.
Speaking of L and that forest scene, they talk about walking to Illinois.
Uh huh.
You know what's in Illinois?
Chicago.
And last season we saw Elle's punk rock friends in Illinois. I wonder if we're going to get a meetup with them.
I don't know. It'd be interesting. A lot of people have made comments about this being an 8-episode season, and last episode is a 9. And you know, I don't share this opinion. I know you do, but like that extra episode that has all of the uncanny X-Men or New Mutants or whatever was a lot of people's least favorite episode. So
certainly, mine.
This might be the perfect season because you just take last season and excise the one bad thing, and then everything's cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
I wonder how they managed to blow up Hopper's truck. I don't know how you can blow up a car like that just by starting it, but I guess Hopper could figure out how. Seemed like
kind of gas leak, something.
Seemed like the Russian scientists knew what was up, but...
Yeah, that was weird. I did like them stopping at the 7-Eleven. It was an opportunity to show off kind of all the old packaging of all...
And new Coke.
As hard as it is to stock like the general store, I can imagine a 7-Eleven would be incredibly hard to stock because all of that shit is perishable, right? Like... You're going to have to go out and you're going to have to recreate a lot of these things because you're not just going to go on eBay and find, here's a crate of 47 1985 Tampax containers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have to recreate the snowball? Do you have snowballs from 1985? Like these Hostess logos?
Like, do they try to get away with like modern packs? If a Russian's going to smash a face into it within like 5 seconds, do you right. need to like get the
authentic
They've
got
packaging?
One hero snowball package that they show up close with the old logo.
It's not a snowball. It's actually made out of resin and it's indestructible, but...
But it was cool to see all those old logos and packaging.
Plus, it's really funny, like, you know, him commandeering the car
and
trying to tell the guy that this is the most dangerous criminal, and that he cut to his face. And he does kind of look like, who was the Steve Buscemi character from...
Con Air.
Yeah, he kind of does look like that. Like, he does look like a guy who might murder children when he's slurping on that slushy.
Could be, yeah.
But that plate, I thought, was really funny.
Uh-huh.
When they get to the bottom of the elevator shaft and they're looking at this miles-long corridors, and Steve's like, hope you guys are all in shape, and then he goes, looking at you, roast beef.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I'm like, whoa, Steve, taking a shot? Like, Dustin's not even really all that chubby anymore, but then I realized that his damn shirt says roast beef on it.
Yeah, it's got a cow tanning.
Yeah, roast
on
beef.
The thing. Yeah, he's been wearing that shirt since the beginning of the season.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, we were talking about, like, how long... the season has been so far in universe terms.
Right.
I think we came up with like 3, maybe 4 days.
Yeah. It feels like, cause there's the day that Dustin got back and then there was a night, and then the next day, Billy sets up the date with Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets abducted and he got a next day. And then that's,
you might
the,
even
so,
have
so
a
then
next
that's
day
the night that
Heather's
they actually
parents.
Do the stakeout. And then they've got a next. So there's at least 4 days there, maybe even 5.
Yeah. So we're getting pretty close to July 4th, and we know there's going to be this big Hawkins-wide bash. It's going to probably be the carnival that we saw in the trailers.
I wonder if that's going to be how they contain this, because there's going to be so many bombs and stuff and fireworks going off that it's going to mask like gunfire and massive other things, or it's going to be blamed on like a firework explosion gone bad or something.
Because that's the thing. This is expanding outside of the circle of trust, right?
No, it looks like that's one of the things we said in the coverage is this, like how this looks like it's going to be very hard to contain.
Yeah.
Like if even just 50 people from Hawkins are turned into mush zombies,
mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and that's been kind of the trajectory of Stranger Things. They've been broadening it and broadening it from, you know, just the kids and Hopper and Joyce to now, okay, we're bringing in new kids. We're bringing in other parents. This season, we're bringing in the entire town. Do they go, like, entire state of Indiana? Do they go the entire country in season 4? What do they do after
this?
They
just nuke all of central eastern Indiana just to be safe. Sorry, Plainfield.
Yeah, I mean, you might have like a Red Dawn kind of thing happening in season four if they don't take care of this Russian problem, the Soviet problem.
What else do we want to talk about? Oh, so we're talking about all these zombies and how they might storm the mall. And I thought we were getting kind of like a clue to how they might be beaten because they share this weakness. When the Mind Flayer is trying to actively control them, it seems like any damage you do to one is felt by all of them.
Yeah.
But then they show how that could be because like I'm envisioning this like, you know, Maul Battle of Starcourt sequence where there's like, so you got a conventional thing, you're trying to kill zombies coming at you, but every time you kill one, they dissolve the goo and form into an even larger, like the corpses become an even larger, more difficult to deal with creature. It could be pretty, it could get pretty crazy by the end of the season.
Yeah. That's one of the things I don't feel like I had a good grasp on is how strong are these zombie people? It took everything L had to take down Billy, it seemed, in the first encounter. And I did not expect, I think this is maybe a misstep in my opinion. They made Billy so powerful that I actually didn't think Jonathan or Nancy could plausibly take out one of these things. And, you know, a fire extinguisher to the face doesn't seem any stronger than throwing someone through a brick wall. So
maybe like Billy, since he's the prime host, maybe he's got an extra portion of the Mind Flayer's strength. Because you're right, like L blew him through a cinder block fucking wall.
Yeah.
And then, scissors to the back and a couple of whacks with a fire extinguisher, and these guys are dissolving into goo. Now, it's entirely possible that they didn't care, like, or the Mind Flayer didn't care because it can just use this opportunity to reveal itself because it's kind of the jigs up. But it is. I don't know if we'll get explanations. I don't know if I need an explanation. But it is, as this story gets bigger and bigger, it does feel like it's riding on that ragged edge between like I'm willing to roll with it, but like, oh, I wish I knew enough rules about this to where when something happened, I just went like, of course this makes sense. And I think they're just leaning really heavily on some of their source material, like the thing, like things like that to kind of sell that, like, oh, it kind of all works like you expect it to. You've seen the movies, right?
Right.
But I don't know. It depends on what twists and turns we have coming up. Did you feel like the other thing is I felt like the end result monster was more than just two dudes worth of goo mass?
Oh yeah,
like if you liquefy 2 6-foot dudes,
Driscoll, is she?
But like we saw the two puddles of merge into the hallway, and it's resulting looked like about 10 guys worth of stuff. Is this thing like hollow inside? Am I just paying way too much attention to the mass conversion?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. A couple other points of interest I thought was Steve winning a fight.
Oh, yeah.
That was a real moment. Uh-huh. And especially great, as you pointed out, that he's in this, the Scoops Ahoy.
Oh, my God.
Everything is a million times funnier than he's doing all this in a Daffy Duck costume.
Yeah, he's always tried to look so cool before, and he loses the fight. Mm-hmm. Now that he looks so dumb, he can finally win one. Maybe that's the key. Once he stops trying to be cool, he becomes actually cool.
Well, and that's the thing. Like there's another thing I forgot to talk about last episode. There's a scene where Dustin licks his ice cream scoop, and he's like, "Hey, not my scoop!" And he like twirls it and like holsters it. And I'm like, Steve is kind of effortlessly cool no matter what the circumstance. Like, he's just kind of a cool dude. So he found a way in a summer vacation to, like, I don't know, spin scoops. He doesn't have to. No. He can just phone it in, but he's not. He's going to be a scoop slinger. And now he's kicking ass in this sailor boy outfit. I like it. But yeah, I do think there is a kind of inverse connection. But the harder Steve tries to be like Abercrombie and Fitch kind of Gap cool, the less actually Stranger Things cool he is. And the more he just like doesn't give a fuck, the actually cooler he is. Also, what is the deal with the chemicals? They're making a big deal about how Heather's family just chowed down on Comet Cleanser and Ajax and bleach and everything in the house. And the kids pointed out that as they learned in chemistry class, anytime you mix chemicals, you get a new substance. is there a possible relation to the green shit, or is this just, you know, is this the mystery? Like, what is the Mind Flayer trying to build? What is it trying to assemble?
Yeah, no, it's definitely the biggest question that I have. Are the kids right? Is it making something? Is this maybe, you know, is the thing that it's making its physical form, which is manifested when it turns these people to goo? Do the chemicals have anything to do with that? I don't know the answer. And I think that's kind of the biggest sort of drip feed they're giving us throughout the season, is the question about, okay, what were the Russians doing? But we kind of got a lot of that up front. Maybe there's more to it, but maybe not. But this is like the central question. What is the Mind Flayer up to with all these chemicals?
And then I guess the final thing is that it looks like there's a thaw in the Cold War between the sexes. Mike and Elle are kind of starting to, you know, she gave him the olive branch, which was emptying the candy machine. And Mike's, you know, trying to relate to her. See how that goes the rest of the season. Anything else you want to talk about?
They missed a real moment there when he offers the M&Ms to do like an E.T. reference. It could have been Reese's Pieces.
Right.
And when he asked about her species,
she's
liking them.
Really a different species.
Yeah, it would have been perfect. You know, call me up, Duffer Brothers. Let me just get a quick edit in there and we'll make this happen for season four.
But yeah, otherwise, I kind of want to get back to see what's going on. I want to see the further adventures of Hopper and Joyce and Smirnoff in the Todd Fathermobile.
So yeah, it's a great license plate. I did want to say one more thing to follow on kind of like with last episode where we were talking about Nancy and Jonathan and Nancy and her mom having these big moments. There was another big moment between Nancy and Jonathan here where Jonathan, you know, basically apologizes to Nancy, says, I was completely wrong, shouldn't have doubted you, all that kind of stuff. That was a big moment between them. And it feels like it brought them back together, at least temporarily. I don't know.
Yeah, all the pairings seem to be kind of repairing the damage. No word on them. Although I did notice that Max and Lucas, they didn't make a big deal of it, but they had kind of paired off and were doing their thing when Will felt the presence of the Mind Flayer entering the hospital. But yeah, that was cool too. Anything else, or should we get back to our little marathon?
No, I've got one thing to promote before we get out of here.
Okay.
My girlfriend made a Stranger Things pin. It's at pin-y.com. It's kind of one of those pins where it very much has like a color scheme and a vibe of Stranger Things.
Enameled kind of jewel pins.
Right, that you would put on your lapel or something. But the cool thing about it is it's one of those that you flip over, and it's just text, and it's one of them that you flip over and it says a different thing. So it says Stranger from this angle. And then when you flip it over, it says things. It's pretty cool. Go check it out if you're interested in pins of any kind at pin-y.com.
It's like Dan Brown's Angels and Demons.
Yeah.
Says angels one way and demons the other.
Is that a thing?
I think. It's definitely a thing.
I've only seen the Tom Hanks movie, so.
I read at my an old boss of mine's behest the Da Vinci Code, and I'm like, that's enough Dan Brown for me. Thank you.
Okay.
So we will be back with our continue our marathon today. We're going to do episodes 4, 5, and 6, and we will be considering feedback at next week at the during a Stranger Things 3 wrap-up. If you'd like to send feedback for our consideration, please do so at strangerthings@baldmove.com. There's also show threads on our forums, forums.baldmove.com. You can send your feedback that way. Excited to see what everybody's thinking about this season, and we'll be back next week to talk about it when we wrap things up. But now it's time to get back to Stranger Things. Until the next one, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.